My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for in World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
That was a shooting gallery up there.
I could hear the tremble in his voice.
She suffered a fairly severe beating. The video is pretty graphic.
Justice for us seems almost impossible.
It's not fun to watch somebody die, and they knew she was in mortal peril.
They have not asked the hard questions. Why was the Capitol intentionally unsecure that day?
The FBI had information about security concerns before January 6th.
They're out for blood, and they're getting it. They appear to be winning.
Were the actions of the Capitol Police out of line? Were there violations in use of force?
Now I describe it as an inside job.
I'm ready to do whatever God calls me.
There's an old Chinese saying my ancestors learned before the Communist Party took over our country. The family is the essential unit of human society, and that you must have honor and defend your family. But it's not always easy to do.
When the regime gives the order, you have to kill.
My heart was pounding. I felt my body bouncing and twisting on the floor. They put numbers on our shoulders, then separated us into rows of even and odd numbers. I was number 9. My brother, he is still in prison. And my sister, she was sent to a labor camp without a trial. But there's one piece of evidence they haven't been able to destroy yet. I left everything behind. If I can't expose what they did to us, then all of our suffering would be for nothing.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. Thanks so much for being with me. I know you have a choice in where you can listen each and every day, and I thank you for keeping it tuned here to Chosen Generation Radio. If you missed any portions of hour number one, we will have that up. You can go to Show Archives and click on the Rumble link. We spent an hour with Dr. David Wormser. Remember that Dr. Wormser was in Tel Aviv when the attack happened on October the 7th. We did a 2.5 hour broadcast on that day in the midst of sirens going off and in the midst of all that was happening, and have continued to follow up as he has been an advisor to the Israeli government on all of the matters that are at hand there. And it is it's very serious. But one of the big things we talked about is the ideology and the mentality that is associated with what is Islam. And I have had IQ al-Rasuli on my program. Go to my blog page. Two of the interviews that I did with al-Rasuli are up there. He quotes the Quran, scripture and verse, in explaining exactly who Islam is and why the events of the 7th of October are in complete and total, congruent. Yeah, they're congruent with the Hadith and the Quran. They're not aberrations. These aren't just, we've got to stop thinking about, oh, they're just, no, they're not radicals. They're following their, it would be like us actually loving our neighbor. Okay. It would be like us actually making God first in our lives. I mean, it would be that. Okay. That's what they're doing. I welcome my next guest, Jared, to the program. Jared Knott. Jared's been with me before, and it's funny, and he's the author, by the way, of Tiny Blunders, Big Disasters, 39 Tiny Mistakes That Changed the World Forever. And Jared's first statement to me was, well, my goodness, has the world not changed since we talked last? Wow. More fodder. Well, I don't want to call it fodder because it's not fodder. I don't mean that in a disrespectful way because this affects all of us. But certainly more material for book number two, as you look at what's going on right now, and there's a lot of mistakes that are happening, Jared.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's the old Chinese curse. Now, may you live. And that curse has hit us right in the head. But yes, I am working on the sequel to the book, and I'm blessed to say the book has done very, very well. It's, I assume you're bragging on it a little bit, but it's sold over 23,000 copies. It continues as well. Ranks very high in several of the categories there. And then book number two, which is rich, rich opportunities for a lot of mistakes that have happened in the last several years. And among them, I have an article coming out this week in Blaze Media talking about the Israelis. Again, the Mossad, very technically sensitive, was caught with their pants on their part. There's a big scandal there in Israel. They were not monitoring, apparently, the Hamas's radio traffic in the months leading up to the attack. There were other indications that the attack was coming, and they were perhaps too complacent. The guard was down a little bit more than it should have been, and that's why they got caught in such a horrible spots.
You know, David and I talked about that. I mean, there was an arrogance. He's been very vocal about expressing it, and there's an understanding of that, and you know, however you want to look at it, but Israel believed they were invincible. They believed they were so strong that they could not be overtaken. They anticipated an attack, but they anticipated between 100 and 500, and just in the first wave, there were over 4,000. Now we know, based on the evidence, and there was a second wave that was probably equal or proportionate in numbers, maybe even a few more. So that was part of it. The other issue was is that they had been given, their intel led them to believe that their attack was going to come at the West Bank, only because of the fact that they had these, you know, 20, 40, 50 family, kibbutzes that were right next to major Arab cities and which they knew were going to be totally defenseless if an assault came towards them. And so they moved two of their divisions up there in an effort to try to mitigate that. And again, made themselves vulnerable. But I think the other piece to this, Jared, is, you know, Israel counted on America, and Americans were part of the Iron Dome. They were part of that whole process. And we've got to remember that Biden put enemies of Israel in charge of the people that were to oversee all of that. You had Malley, who was removed in April, but then you had Ariana Tabatabai and Mihir Bhatar, who, according to C4 news outlet and their investigative report, were clearly connected to Tehran.
Yes, well, kind of looking at it from 30,000 feet, the previous administration had heavy sanctions against Iran, and it was crippling their economy. They had protests in the street. There was even some talk of destabilizing, replacing the regime. Of course, they have secret police to eliminate that threat. But they had their hands full of just trying to keep their own people subdued, and they did not have the billions of dollars to spend on adventurism abroad. That adventurism, of course, would include thousands of rockets and other kinds of material equipment and so on and so forth to finance something like this. So you can make a serious argument that the war in Ukraine would not have taken place under Donald Trump, because he told Putin that he would bomb Moscow if he invaded Ukraine. You could also make the argument that Iran would not have been so powerful and so wealthy and having all these billions of dollars to spend on terrorism, because they're a known spreader of state terrorism. They could barely keep themselves fed. This war might not have taken place either. So it's possible that neither of the wars would have taken place. This kind of aggressive adventurism on the part of Putin and on the part of Iran, and now, of course, coming from China, would have been curtailed, would have been held in check under a more aggressive administration. That is one major overall feature, I think, of the whole discussion. Another thing is that the Israelis got plagued. The Iranians and their teachers and instructors and strategists were keeping the battlefront quiet for several years. Hamas had been very quiet for several years. People who study, military people, experts who study surprise attacks, say that the natural tendency for human beings to be complacent, everything is okay, everything's going to be okay, they can sleep well at night, et cetera, like that. Really, you have to be very keen and alert and a little bit neurotic about possible attacks. The experts on this, I'd say, studied historically, say really surprise attacks almost always have some indication, even sometimes even serious indication, that an attack was coming. It tends to be kind of ignored. Well, it's going to be okay. Well, it's not that serious. That natural human tendency to say things are going to be all right, and you get surprised.
We call that the calm before the storm, right, Jared?
Yes. But now the Egyptians claim that 3 days before the attack, they warned the Israeli government, Netanyahu, that an attack was coming, something big was coming. The Israelis deny having received anything. If I had to bet $10, I'd bet there's something to the Egyptian claim. But there were indications that were ignored or not taken as seriously as they should have.
Well, you know, if you look at, right, the 67 attack with Golda Meir, you know, her head of intelligence, I mean, they were warned. There were individuals sitting around that table that said, hey, an attack is coming. And the guy that was in charge of making sure that the forces were where they needed to be, basically, he vehemently told their intelligence people, no, I don't buy it. I don't believe it. It's not going to happen. And subsequently they were ill prepared and initially were in a really bad spot during that war.
Yeah. There's example after example. You go back to the Battle of the Bulge. There was a warning coming from, that was Patton at his best, coming from Patton and Patton's intelligence officer, that a big spoiler attack was coming. They were going to avoid Patton. They didn't want any trouble with Patton. They attacked Hodges on the other side there. But a warning was sent to Eisenhower and to Bradley and also to Hodges that to expect an attack. They got caught completely by surprise. It was kind of the United States Army at its worst. And it would be Eisenhower taking some responsibility for the attack coming through the area that the RDN did. Also, Pearl Harbor. Of course, now that's a whole other controversy.
Right.
There are people say that the Roosevelt and Marshall did know it was coming, wanted it to come because they wanted to behind the idea of a war.
I can actually give some insight to that. And I've actually gone back now through Ancestry.com and validated what my dad told me. But I have actually a copy of the ship passage, both to and from Pearl Harbor. My grandfather was a civil engineer working for the United States government. They were stationed in Hawaii from 37 until, I guess it was 41, right before the attack happened. And he told me as a child, he remembered being told by his father, the head of Japan, one of the leaders of Japan, was given a private tour of all of Pearl Harbor. I mean, a layout of the entire island and all of the military and where everything was. I mean, they knew where everything was. And he knows this because he was a civil engineer. It was a part of his job. And then the civilians were removed roughly a week before the attack happened. They were all just told, hey, you're get off the island.
Very strange. Also, now in that connection, it was a group that broke the Japanese code. They worked with it. They very, very high level, extremely high level in military intelligence. They were warning them that an attack was coming. There were other signals coming that an attack was coming. Now, there are those who say they expected the attack to come. They wanted the attack to come, but they did not think it was going to be as severe as it was. They had these new torpedoes.
Right.
It could be shallow water, et cetera, like that. And Roosevelt wanted the United States to get involved in the war with Europe as well as Japan. And maybe, by the way, maybe it was the right thing to do if they thwarted the attack because it wasn't Tora. It had been some other signal that we were on high alert and we had defeated the Japanese. Hitler might not have declared war against the United States, blah, blah, blah. And, of course, you don't know what else take you way off into the weeds, but it's possible that it was actually the right thing to do. That's a whole great big discussion.
Well, Roosevelt's New Deal was failing. The economy was grinding to an even greater halt. The war provided an opportunity to flip those factories, and suddenly now virtually every American, had a job and had something to do. There's a lot of aspects about all of this. Obviously, war is never... never a fun. I haven't fought in combat. I was on the intel side of it, but I know from friends of mine, war is scarring, and it's never a good thing. But it is something that man has been engaged in from the very beginning of time, and there have been wars and types of wars that have gone on, and good always attempting to have to fight against evil. And certainly one would 100% agree that Hitler was evil, that what was happening in Japan, even to the Japanese people, was oppressive and evil. Mussolini and what he was doing in Italy were evil. Unfortunately, we didn't follow Patton, and this is part of your book, I know, but we didn't follow Patton's lead and stamp out the communists that rose up in Russia, which would have ended a whole lot of our headaches.
That's another great big gigantic subject. I'm not sure that we would have wanted. Of course, they did not have the nuclear weapon then. We did. That's a whole another great big discussion. You can go back there. Now, Hitler, it was Dr. Morrell who was giving him opioids as well as amphetamines. And there was certain something was going wrong with Hitler's basic judgment. He'd been irrational and in touch with reality, but someplace in that 1941 era, he was starting to act irrationally. And his decision, his exuberant decision, oh, now we got the United States where we wanted, and we're going to, we've already invaded Russia. Now we're going to engage another big enemy, the United States. I mean, hey, you've already got an extremely full plate, bucko. I mean, what's going on? So that was a one of the, if you were to list, I may write a book, The Biggest Mistakes in History, and someplace near the top will be the decision to declare war against the United States. It was not a certain thing that Germany would go to war with the United States after the attack on Pearl Harbor. We would have our own war there in Japan, couldn't be distracted by the war in Europe. So it was only, we only went to war with Germany when Hitler foolishly declared war on the United States several days after the attack on Pearl Harbor. And that, of course, that's a lot of what-ifs that were going on there. We might have been forced to pay attention to Japan and leave Britain to handle, and Russia to handle Germany on their own. It's hard to say, but that was all moot because Hitler made an incredibly stupid mistake of declaring war on the United States. Now, he made another stupid mistake declaring war on Russia. He had won the war. If he just stopped where he was, he might have. But by the way, they say if he'd invaded the Middle East to get access to the oil in Saudi Arabia, he would have been a complete nation, have everything he possibly want, or he might have been in a position to get buy oil from Russia if they were on friendly terms. It's hard to say, but the whole business about buying on way more than he could chew, possibly because he was under the influence of opioids and amphetamines from Dr. Morrell. It's a crazy, kooky kind of a thing, but at least thank God we won that one.
Let's look in our final moments just at kind of where we sit right now. It seems to me that we're making that we're being shredded, by a thousand cuts, if you will. When you look at what happened over the weekend, we had these Palestinian protesters that attempted to breach the fence at the White House with no response. Nothing's happened. Nobody's done anything. While American patriots actually still sit in POW prisons without even having faced a charge, they're just being held now for going on over 1,000 days. Are these not the kinds of blunders that would that lead to, I don't know, possibly devastating impact?
Yes, it's a whole great big hornet's nest problem. I have been surprised about the extent of the anti-Semitism across the world, in the United States, at Ivy League colleges across the United States. Very strange, very surprising. Then, of course, we have a president of the United States whose family has taken tens of millions of dollars from the Chinese. And, of course, it looks like we have a president of the United States, shocking as it is to say it, on the take for our biggest enemy. I mean, how strange, how bad is that? And of course, Iran, with all of its billions of dollars, now that it's been, the sanctions have been lifted against it, all these strange things happening. And there's been no movement to reinforce it, to once again implement those sanctions, which is letting Iran sell its oil, making billions of dollars, they're investing more money in terrorism. Some strange things are happening. The current administration has just blundered in Afghanistan, blundered the whole situation with Ukraine, as well as lifting sanctions, blundering against Iran, just kind of fumble all over themselves. So it's not a well-managed program from our side of things, and it's causing a lot of pain.
Well, you talk about the anti-Semitism. You know, we've always anticipated, or we've always seen anti-Semitism from the woke side relative to the whole aspect of God and the Bible and those biblical values. But we're also seeing it on what many would consider to be the alternative right. We're seeing a rise in the embrace of that whole Elders of Zion that was created by the communists in the 1920s and embracing that as if that is somehow a factual document.
I think, yes, the protocols of the Elders of Zion. I have, by the way, a chapter on that in the new book coming out. It would take a nutcase to believe in that whole document. That's clearly a fraud, but we got plenty of nutcases willing to believe it. I'm going to speak very frankly here. Why is it that there's so much anti-Semitism? I think it's because they're well known for being a successful, wealthy, intelligent group, and people sometimes just resent the hell out of them for that very reason. So that's just part of a visceral, guttural reaction kind of a thing. And I'm surprised, people at Harvard, people at Cornell, they themselves are successful and intelligent, and possibly, et cetera, et cetera. why in the world is such a resentment there? Is it the professors? Is it the money that they've spent in propaganda? And, you know, on the other side, I don't know, but it's taken me personally by surprise. I'm almost shocked about the hatred of Jews across the world.
Well, and I have to say, you know, much like a lot of the woke Jews that were in Israel that were a part of the resistance against Netanyahu and the conservatives that were voted in by very large numbers, by the way, of the people of Israel. I think they, like the woke Jews in New York and in America, have suddenly come to the revelation that, hey, you know what? Joining the woke side, joining the progressive side, does not shield you from their thirst for the blood of Jews and the anti-Semitic beliefs and how they attack. I mean, their kids are the ones at these Harvard schools and Cornell schools and UCLA schools that are being attacked. And they're supposedly on the same side, but they're not.
I remember several years ago, I had a discussion with a Jewish friend of mine. He was talking about how the Jews, of course, are primarily on the left, the Democratic left. And I was saying, well, of course, in terms of supporting Israel, your friends are over there on the right. It seemed like it was against your own interest to be supporting the other party. And so it's strange. Two-thirds of the Jews vote Democratic. Because, well, the Democrats are not your friends.
Yep.
They're your number one interest, the conservative right over here. We're the ones that are supporting you. You hope that they will go that direction. So,
yeah, we're about out of time. But, well, you know, they're learning the lesson that many in the black community have finally begun to learn as well, which is Democrats don't like you. They hate you. They're oppressing you. They are using you. They are abusing you. And at the end of the day, they will kill you because they don't like you.
They have many policies that claim to be in favor for the black community that do great harm. To fund the police has led to a rise in crime. Who have been the people most murdered? Those people in high crime areas, people of color are the victims. Thousands of black people are not with us anymore, who've been killed as a result of that very foolish program. Let me plug the book just a second here. Yes, tinyblundersbigdisasters.com. Tinyblundersbigdisasters.com. You go there, you get 2.5 free chapters on my website. Again, won 6 awards, doing very well. People, it's a fun book to read. And go there and give it a try. We have a book player there. And we also have a portrait gallery, which is one of my favorite parts of the book. Boom.
TinyBlundersBigDisasters.com.
Yes, sir.
TinyBlundersBigDisasters. Yep. TinyBlundersBigDisasters.com. Pick up that book today. It's along the lines of everything that we've been talking about. And it will really open your eyes up to understand so many different things about history. And boy, can we use some good history lessons, Jared. Thank you for writing it.
Yes, absolutely. I appreciate it very much. And a good Christmas gift. What's that on your collar real quick? Your pin on your collar?
That is the Constitutional Police and Sheriff's Officers Association, Sheriff Mack's organization. And it is encouraging our sheriffs and our police to know, especially our sheriffs, their constitutional power that they've been given to basically bring law and order and actual justice to the areas that they serve, and why it's important that we vote in and support constitutional sheriffs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100% correct. Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for asking. It's been an honor to have you back on the program. I greatly appreciate it. Again, give us the website real quick for our final plug.
Yes, tinyblundersbigdisasters.com. Doing free chapters.
Tinyblundersbigdisasters.com. I'll be back with Lynn Taylor coming up right after this brief break. Jared, thanks for being here today.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Very much. Have a good day.
Look, I am for marriage between a man and a woman. I am for life from conception.
I am for following the Bible, and I believe that our founders started this nation on biblical principles. I am in support of our military and believe that America should play a role in world security. I believe our Constitution was intended for a moral people and that the Bible contains the only true moral code. I believe we are all born sinners and that God in His grace and mercy sent His Son, Jesus Christ, to die for our sins, and that if we will confess our sins, He is just and righteous to forgive us our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. I believe salvation is not just accomplished in a little prayer, but that it is found in how that transformation is lived out. Jesus is to be the Lord of our lives, and we should follow biblical precepts. This is not legalism or works, but a life lived out in love and honor towards the one who died for my sins. Faith without works is dead and is no faith at all. I believe that we will fall and that we need to have a repentant heart, and that God will ultimately bring us into perfect action through Jesus Christ. Spirit man perfected and soulish man in progress. I believe that we are not to live in guilt and shame when we fall, but we repent and get up and move closer to Jesus. I believe that if our nation will repent and turn from wickedness, that God will heal our land. I believe that as a Christian, I must occupy till He comes, and that to call evil wicked and to warn about those evil acts is a part of the mandate of Christianity. That to love also means to be willing to take the risk necessary to confront a friend with the truth in hopes that their heart will be turned because their life matters, even if it means, in that moment, they will possibly hate me. It means that I must risk scorn to stand for truth, and that I can never sit silently by while evil attempts to conquer the world. God is my everything, and Jesus is the love of my life. That does not make me weak, but strong, not silent, but bold, and not fearful, but courageous. Therefore, if you are my friend, while we may not fully agree, know that I share what I share because I care. If you strongly disagree with these beliefs, they are not debatable for me, and you can, if you choose, unfriend me. I do not say this in anger, but in love. I wish for you eyes to see and ears to hear that Jesus Christ is the only way to salvation, and that God, not man, gets to decide what is truth, life, and the way. God bless you.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country.
Hi, this is Pastor Greg, and you're listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Get more at ChosenGenerationRadio.com. That's Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glass.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. Well, during these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my standard size MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen size My Pillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. Or my king size, regular $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen or call the 1-800 number below to receive this exclusive offer. If you do it right now, I'm going to include a free gift with your purchase. Thank you and God bless.
So up next, we have ClanSlate. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related, it can really help with inflammation because you're helping clean the body. And ClanSlate is a formula that's made from a natural ortho-silic acid that basically is put into a formulation that's naturally occurring that uses different processes from polarization to heating to cooling to different types of catalysts which will go in the body and really help communicate to get rid of those things that don't need to be there. People don't understand why there's so many autoimmune disorders, but our environment's toxic. The land, air, and water have changed. We've been exposed to nuclear war, and the issue is if there's a nuclear bomb or there's pollution or there's war in one country, it actually affects everything up to the stratosphere. So we're all connected, and we've really got to clean things out.
You can pick up your clean slate today at cgrforlife.com. That's cgrforlife.com. Pick up your clean slate today.
You can support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation by visiting www.chosengenerationradio.com. And now, back to Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. Get more at the website, ChosenGenerationRadio.com, ChosenGenerationRadio.com. Well, I'm very pleased to welcome my next guest to the program. She's been with us a number of times now, and I'm always pleased to have her with me, especially as we talk about education and as we talk about parental rights. I want to welcome the Common Core diva, Lynn Taylor. Lynn, welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you so much, Pastor Greg. It is always such a joy to be with you and your audience.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. Well, they're back at it again with regards to the issue of you know, talking about parental rights. And it's always interesting how they frame things, right? You know, they do it in such a way that you would initially think, oh, this is a good thing. I mean, they're doing, I mean, they want parental involvement. They're back to recognizing that parents have to play a role in all of this. But it's parental involvement predicated on them handing the parent the rule book as saying, this is how you're going to parent. You're going to parent the way that we're telling you to parent. Not, and by the way, more than likely, it's going to contradict this book here.
It absolutely will. Yeah, it absolutely will contradict everything that was God given to you. Because, you know, God, whether you acknowledge his presence in your life or not, he's the one who made you a parent in the first place. And with that came inalienable rights and responsibilities. And no government on the face of this planet has the power to take away inalienable rights. But yet we see, thanks to the United Nations, a concerted effort to do just that since 1945. Excuse me, 1948.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and it's just getting worse.
Yeah, it well, and I would argue potentially in agreement, but in association, I would go back to about 1913 and Woodrow Wilson, right, and the League of Nations.
Right. Oh, absolutely, because that was the precursor. Yeah,
right. The whole idea. I mean, Woodrow Wilson was a globalist who began with the idea that you know we needed to surrender the sovereignty of the United States to an all-knowing global world power.
Ugh. disgusting, because that totally flies in the face of the framework on which our nation was founded. It was supposed to be limited government, not global government. It was never supposed to overreach into your family and say, oh, yeah, mom and dad, by the way, if you're not parenting in the way in which the government thinks that you are or should be, we're going to come in and we're going to micromanage. But, you know, the Every Student Succeeds Act set that up with family ambassadors and in-home visits. And, you know, in the name of COVID, we saw that ramp up. And now we have public-private partnerships who buddy up to our schools, and they're, it's like, the, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we did a show on the campaign for grade level reading, how they wanted to take and use Flint, Michigan as the test dummy city for socializing families. Well, they've come out with another webinar in support of, here's the name of the webinar, Building Parent Power, Fostering a Movement of Informed Learning Agents. So the crux of this is, it's not about, as you just said, hey, parents, you parent the way in which you see fit. It's, we're going to hand you the rule book and the playbook. They're doing that exactly. And what they're saying is that a parent is now being redefined with an asterisk to mean not just the biological or the adopted or the, you know, like if a grandparent was assigned parental roles, it's not talking about that. It's talking about any adult mm-hmm. in the school system, in the community, or in your family that cares about your child's education being labeled as a parent. Now, the other redefinition of parents and harnessing this parent power is to build a quasi-effective force of parents being called informed learning agents or agents of the state or agents of change to go in and fix a corrupt and broken system using corrupt and broken tactics.
Well, of course. I mean, absolutely. Their objective here is to essentially usurp any form of parental influence and own the child. I mean, their ultimate goal is they want to own your kid. You know, and we've talked about it before. I mean, you think about when you go to school, What do you do? You have to sign your kid is in the school. If you want to pick your child up to go to any kind of an appointment to anything whatsoever, A, they decide what is an excused absence and what is not an excused absence. And then B, they also demand that you have to sign your child out. Your child. Right. Your child. And you have to sign them out.
Go ahead.
Well, one other thing I just want to throw in there, as you were talking about, you know, the they're using education as a means to get in, you know, to your home and basically decide whether or not you're, you know, following protocol. They do the same thing with health.
Oh, yeah.
Their health, you know, what they call them, you know, health visits. Mm-hmm. And those health visits are really to look around your house. The other day I had to have my leg checked for a DVT, and so they were doing it, and the nurse came in and she said, "Listen, I have to ask you these questions. We're required." And I'm like, "Okay." So one of them that I laughed at was, "Are you taking any illegal drugs?" And I looked at my wife and I'm laughing, right? And I mean, right? Because I'm in my 60s, right? And I'm thinking, okay. So I said, you know, I'm from that different generation, I guess. But I'm like, do people really tell you? Like, they're like, go, yeah, I'm taking illegal drugs. And she's like, yeah, actually, they will tell us that they're doing that because it's important relative to the mix of what we give them. And I'm like, wow. Well, that isn't that interesting? And then she said to me, and this is what triggered the thought relative to what you were sharing.
Yes.
Do you feel safe in your home?
Yep, there it is. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel safe in your home? And I know in the medical world now, a lot of times they will tell the parent, we want you to leave the room because we need to have a private conversation with your child.
Yep, over my dead body.
Exactly. Over if your doctor ever says that, you need to say to them, no, not playing that game, but thank you for calling. And then you need to find a different doctor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, it's interesting because in this webinar, Pastor Greg, they would acknowledge that the parents are the first educators of their children. But then they went right into this vein of, we're going to co-produce your child because we need better outcomes, better outcomes in education. Now, what are outcomes? If I haven't said it on your show, I've said it on several others. Outcomes are a government speak for we're going to fit you inside a box that we determine, not what God designed you to be.
Programming.
We're going to force you in this box.
Yep.
And we're going to do it by enabling the parent to parent in the system's way.
It's so programming. It's indoctrination. But go ahead. Continue. Yeah.
It absolutely is. But you talked about, you know, do you feel safe in your home? We have what's known as ACE assessments. That's adverse childhood experience assessments. They will go into minute detail on a child as far as, are there things that you're being forced to do at home that you don't want to do? Or is anyone taking you to church more times a week than you want to go? Is anyone doing drugs? Is someone doing alcohol? You know, all these things that are not the school's business is coming up on this particular assessment.
Yep.
And the guise is the more the child says yes, first of all, the more the school and the education system and all their partners can come in and say, oh, well, now mom and dad, we know, blah, 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 and here's how we're going to fix it.
Right.
But then they get the kid in on, or excuse me, the child in on interventions, which will include sometimes medication, but more times than not, mental health overreaches that are not within a school's jurisdiction. But because of the Every Student Succeeds Act shifting that Medicaid funding, it did now cover it so that it is under the school's perusal. Now, in this new webinar, they're talking about, oh, well, you know, we're blaming parents are just not able to do a good job, Pastor Gray, because they're so stressed out, they're so burned out. So now what they've done on the flip side is not only do we have the ACE for the child, we now have the assessment for the parent. And so I want you to think of an Oreo, and those assessments are the outer layers, and right. Your family is in the middle, and you are being squished so that the two meet, so that when they meet, the system could go, aha, it's our turn to fix all this.
It's really stunning you have to think about this. They have been working this plan. You know, again, I would go back to, you know, even Dewey in the 1920s, right? And you've been on you have identified Dewey. You've talked about his background, who he is, where he came from, how he got there before. Right. But they've been working this for 100 years, folks. You got to understand that this has been going on for 100 years. Now, were they able to do? You know, when people talk about, well, yeah, but, you know, everything fell apart when we took God out or when we took prayer out. Here's the thing that is confusing, I think, for people in understanding that I've made a point of, and I love your commentary on it, Lynn. And that is this, that my contention is that when the evolution argument began in the 1920s.
Right.
Although the court case would lead one to believe that the creationist won, the reality is that it gave the evolutionists the inroad that they needed to begin introducing that into the system to pull God out, so that by the time they actually did it at the Supreme Court, because now 50 years later, 40 years mm-hmm. later, I've heard so many people say, well, where were all the parents? Why didn't anybody? Where were the preachers? Why didn't somebody? Well, the reason they didn't say anything is that for 40 years they had been being conditioned to believe mm-hmm. that God didn't belong in the school, that prayer didn't belong in the school, that the Bible shouldn't be being read in the school. That was prevalent for 40 years, so that when they did it, it was not even, it was just kind of a little yeah. hiccup. It wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, it was a bump on the road. But I will tell you what, I remember vividly sitting in third grade and fourth grade. And my teacher was like, we're starting the day out with Pledge of Allegiance and I'm reading you a Bible story. Now, everyone knew that wasn't supposed to be. But she was strong enough to continue to do it. And not one parent contacted her and said, hey, I don't like you doing that. Not one parent complained. Not one child said, hey, I don't want to hear it. It's against my beliefs. We sat there and we listened because that was what we were supposed to do. And you know what? I'm grateful that she showed us that example of what it means to stand against the system. And just because they took God out of prayer doesn't mean you had to take God out of your home.
Right.
If you're sending your child to a public system that doesn't include God, then by George, when you get the child home, put God back in it. Make it a teachable moment. You can absolutely do that.
Let me throw this into what you were just saying. I just saw this today. There's a viral video going around about a woman who moved from, I'm pretty sure it was New York to Texas. And she's kind of doing a little parody about, you know, the things that are Texan. But right. one of the things that she identifies is a grocery clerk that says, ma'am. And she kind of makes fun, like, ma'am, why are you, you know, I don't call. And I get what she's saying. And I'm not trying right. to be overly critical of it. But here's the thing to understand. One of the things that's unique about where we live in Texas, and it used to be in the South as a whole, mm-hmm. is the idea of respect.
Absolutely, because I'm going to tell you what, that same school system that I was in back in the 70s when some of the refugees from Vietnam would start showing up in our schools, they didn't look like us, they didn't talk like us, they didn't eat like us, and they didn't worship like us, but no one made it their business to change anything about the way they did. They interacted with us in school, and then when they went home, they carried on in their culture. That was the part of the respect. But we're not seeing respect from any entity, whether it's a government entity, whether it is a partner of the government, show any sort of that respect. No, what we're seeing is that we all have to chuck every bit of that and be tolerant of everyone and put up with everything, even if it goes against our beliefs. So it doesn't mean that you just have to go home and teach God. If you don't believe in God, you know, that's your business. That's between you and him. But my point is, whatever the school took out, you could put back in your own home, because that is aligned with your family attitudes, values, and beliefs. But the system wants to come in and accuse parents, and they did it in this webinar, Pastor Greg, that just simply caring about your child's education is not enough, Pastor Greg, because it's not powerful. I beg to so differ with that. How many caring parents have you met in your ministry and through your years, or I have met in all the research and all the speaking that I have done, where I have seen a caring parent who wasn't powerful? Caring is one of the best actions you can have that shows you are passionate about what happens with your child. Is that not power?
Well, and you know, the other piece to this too is parents are demanded to compromise. They're demanded right. to compromise. They're demanded to allow children to behave in a manner that is detrimental that really truly is detrimental to the child. And that's kind of an interesting thing to bring out, because they want you to think that the behaviors that they are teaching your child are the ones that are in the child's best interests.
Right.
When in reality, that is the absolute opposite of the truth. And and even in Christendom, I you know, you mentioned about talking to parents. I can't tell you how many parents I've talked to who are afraid to lay down the law with their kids. They're afraid to draw the line and hold their children accountable to what is actually right. In opposition, like you said, that teacher who you had that said, no, we're going to read the Bible this morning, then we're going to pray, and we're praying to God through Jesus Christ, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah. Wow. I'm shocked to hear that a lot of parents are not willing to hold their, or afraid to. Is it because the system has so frightened them, Pastor Greg, that they don't feel that that's within their right anymore? Because that's part of their responsibility. Part of nurturing is discipline.
Well, I mean, I think that the fear or the concern is, and I think from a messaging perspective, you know, it's a sense of, well, you know, it's the embrace of the idea of embracing failure. It's embracing the idea of where we can't live up to a standard, and so we're all failing, and now so I'm compromising with that failure, if you will. I don't know if I'm clear. I don't know if I'm clearly expressing that correctly.
You are, and I see what happens. All right, you were talking about the slow boil of that frog of pot. That pot of frogs. As far as Wilson and the leaving God out of school and the evolutionists and all, we've had the same thing happen with parents. We absolutely have. Look at the system who has taught them. This is who is only qualified to teach your child. This is who you only need to go to for this. You're just kind of there taking up space. So when you have webinars like this come in and say, we're going to embrace the parent power, we're going to use it, you're setting them up to one more time be led through a nose ring by someone else's system that is supposedly going to bring them freedom, supposedly going to set their child up for a better success in school. And all it's going to do is continue to erode their freedoms.
Well, here's the issue. You've grown up in a system that has told you that your parents are stupid, that once you become a parent, you're a dummy and you don't know what you're doing. Now they sold that based on, you know, the age difference and your parents grew up in a different time and so on. Well, they can't get you to buy that anymore because that's the lie they told you to get you to rebel against your parents and not believe what they told you. So that lie, the same lie is not going to work, because now if they're telling your kids, if they say to your kid, well, your parents grew up in a different time, you hear that and you go, wait a minute. No, I didn't. I grew up in the same damn time that you're in, because that's what they told me. So I connect the dots. So now they can't do that anymore. So now they got to tell you, listen, because your parents were idiots, now we've got to teach you how to be a parent. So we're going to teach you how to be a parent the way we want you to parent your children. It's folks, this is very well thought out. Don't think for a minute.
It's a script, and they're wanting parents to follow it. Yeah.
And when I say it's been going on for 100 years, I know you don't have 108-year-old and 110-year-old people running this, but please understand that the torch for this has been being passed down for 100 years. It's been being passed down from one elitist progressive group to the next elitist progressive group, because there's a long-term plan, and it's not, as J. Christian Adams says, they're not meeting in secret. This is just what they believe. They believe the crap that they're selling, and they're pushing it on everybody. We're out of time.
We are.
Lynn, thank you again for being here. CommonCoreDiva.com is the website. CommonCoreDiva.com. These are such important situations and topics because, listen, our culture, our society, our nation cannot survive without strong families. And that's why they're after the family. And we're going to keep fighting for the truth. You're listening to ChosenGenerationRadio.com. I'll be back tomorrow with more.